Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Mpoga. This evening, we'll talk about the future of the East African community. And with us tonight is my colleague here, Vincent Makori. Vincent is the host of VOA's Africa 54. Welcome back to the show, Vincent.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. We also have Dr. Christopher Kayumba of the School of Journalism and Communication at the University of Rwanda. He joins us by phone from the capital, Kigali. Good evening, Christopher.
Good evening, Douglas.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and thanks for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. And joining us from Durban, South Africa, is regular panelist Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, and my fellow panelists.
They are doing fine, I hope. And gentlemen, once again, thanks for joining us. As I said, today we talk about the future of this African community. The leaders there have just concluded their 17th Ordinary Summit in Arusha, Tanzania. And among the highlights was the appointment of former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa to be the East African Community facilitator of peace talks between rival factions in volatile Burundi. Another highlight was the admission of South Sudan to be a full member of the East African Community. This decision to accept South Sudan reverses an earlier decision to admit the country with observer status only. According to the treaty establishing the East African Community, new members are admitted only if they respect certain principles of democracy, rule of law, transparency, and social justice. This had prompted some East African diplomats to oppose South Sudan's application. Let's begin from that very point, Vincent. Your brief comment on the admission of South Sudan.
Yeah, first, why wouldn't South Sudan be admitted if the other neighboring countries have operating on the same principles, where we're seeing human rights violations, blatant attempts to change constitutions so that people can stay in power forever. We've seen the suppression of media freedoms in those countries. When you look at the entire region, really very few places would you see that the same, those kind of principles that are supposed to be at the basis for membership, they're being flaunted, they're violated. And so, therefore, South Sudan looks very much like some of the countries in East Africa. So my issue is, what is even the purpose of this community if, looking closely, it doesn't seem really to have the interests of the citizens of these nations at heart.
Christopher, your take on the admission of South Sudan?
Actually, my take is not very different from my friend, what my friend Vincent just mentioned. I would understand it from two perspectives. One, I think the decision to admit South Sudan was taken from an emotional standpoint. The idea that these are our brothers, they have been suffering for a long time, really let us be together with them. And of course, I have also seen that those who see South Sudan as a market, a near market, are also celebrating. But the second level, which is to me extremely important and pertinent to the future sustainability of the East African community, is the reasoned strategic level. From the reasoned strategic level, I think that the decision to admit South Sudan to the East African community was wrong, because at two levels. One, I think the East African community leaders have lost their incentive to make sure that Salva Kiir and his rival Riek Machar, first of all, make sure that peace returns to South Sudan. Secondly, that they share power. Thirdly, that they put in place an elected government with properly working institutions, which goes to the principles you are mentioning and what Vicken was talking about. Therefore, if the South African community is going to be a committee of values, values of democracy, values of peace, values of social justice, values of law, South Sudan should never have been invited at this point in time. I think the community leaders should have given preconditions for its admission, being power sharing, ensuring that peace returns, ensuring that there is an elected government, ensuring that there are functional institutions of government. Mm-hmm. So at that level, therefore, I think the decision is wrong.
I see. Suleiman, there are those who argue that because some leaders in the community are not better than South Sudan itself, so they have set the bar so low so that they can admit anybody. You don't have to meet any standards. Do you agree with that assertion?
Obviously, as my colleagues have said, the admission is determined by more economic imperatives more than anything, not values. We cannot talk about values. It is just the economic imperative, the fact that everybody is trading in South Sudan, it's the new market at the point, and everybody is enjoying that one. Above all, there isn't much moral standing as far as we are concerned. It has been overtaken, the values have been overtaken by time. The way you can see, the region is restless. Mm-hmm. It is politically unstable. So admitting them as well, it doesn't make any difference leaving them outside. So for the sake of it, as my colleagues have said, they had to be admitted because there is no value to be defended as such.
Then in that case, Suleiman, if the long-term goal of these leaders is to have an African federation, given their disparate political systems and the various stages of democracy, if they have the democracy at all, and poor governance, how can you federate in a country? Some of the countries can't have elections. Some of them have left presidents. Some of them even have no states to talk about. How can you attain a federation in that situation?
Of course, the federation is just a facade. It's just for emotional purposes. Otherwise, practicality, for all practical purposes, it is not possible at the present moment. Because there are a lot of disparities within these countries which cannot allow them to have a federation. But for emotional purposes, they are trying to do it because, first of all, as we know, they are just traveling the road which has already been traveled. We have had an East Africa before them. We have had the people integrated even before colonial time. So you find that the political, the social and economic integration within the region is so deep-seated. They are just trying to implement something which was already before and which is already within the people. The integration, the interaction and integration within the people is already so much in. Mm-hmm. So they are just trying to enforce mm-hmm. something which is already there. It is not something new. They are just polishing on top a few of the things which they can manage. But there are some other difficult areas, some other no-go areas which they cannot go because of the different economic systems within the country, different political systems within the country. That one, they're only talking about it from the emotional part of it, but not from the practical part of it. As far as practical is concerned, it will take a long time until when we have got harmonization of the political system within the region.
I see.
And I don't know if that time of harmonization will come, because first, the idea is great. Of course, the East Africa community existed before with fewer nations, but the idea of regional integration is present in every region of the world. So, of course, East African nations, many other African nations want to form federations. At the end of the day, somewhere along the way, there's this dream about having a united Africa. But this is the reason why Africa ends up not earning as much respect internationally. The leaders try to, implement an idea, but without facing the real challenges that face their countries and face their regions. the priority, for example, should have been first, how do you create nations that have a harmonious existence based on certain principles, as we've just mentioned, democracy, human rights,
rule of law,
rule of law and all that. You have the bars, you just mentioned, lowered so almost to the ground, so that anything goes, not only in the East African region, but in many regions of Africa. Right. So instead of addressing the issues that can enable a sustainable federation or a union that can, you know, move forward the continent to greater heights of development and progress, you just create this grouping of nations, just like you've created at the Africa Union level, just a grouping of nations that come together to just have a good time among the leaders, but without tackling the issues that really undermine the progress of the continent.
Christopher, your take.
To put it the other way around, Douglas, the way, to sum it up, the way we are talking about it, we are asking one question, is that this, which Sudan have they admitted? Is there a country anyway? That is the biggest question. Is there a country anyway which they have admitted? Mm-hmm. It shows the short-sightedness of the leaders, and it shows the lackluster attitude of the leaders in the region, because practically speaking, we don't have a South Sudan at the moment.
I see. Christopher, your take on the prospects for a political federation?
You see, political federation, I think we should also ask ourselves, under which conditions have political federations in the past been formed? If you look at political federations in the past, they have been formed through two forces. One is the military force, right? Germany was created because you listen to what Bismarck, former chancellor, said, that federations, several federations are a consequence of blood and iron. So that is one standpoint. The second, more humane, reasoned way federations are created, it is from values like the U.S., if I can call it a political federation of so many states. It is values that bring together different states, different peoples, to say we the people believe in the idea that a leader, to become a leader, is elected. That is sacrosanct. That life is sacrosanct, cannot be touched. That institutions of government must, there must be checks and balances. There must be the independence of the judiciary, of the executive, of the legislature. That there must be equal rights for everybody, that everybody must be free. It is from these values that different states, based on and say, from where we stand, we agree with that. Mm-hmm. And because we agree with those values, and we believe that together we will be a bigger market and benefit as a unit, we form a federation. There is no federation, political federation, that has ever been created from emotional attachment to each other, the feel-good factor. Because I believe the reason South Sudan has been admitted partly is the feel-good factor, largely driven by President Museveni, because, as you know, he has been involved in the South Sudan and the Sudan problem for a long time. And he wants to show himself as the kingmaker and the mediator in this region. And he has trouble in his country, so he wants to go back to Uganda and say, you see, I told you, the other day he was talking about he will give us, East African, a political federation.
Yes.
How can one single leader say that kind of thing? You can see how this thing is lasted. So I think this decision is just based, it is a political decision based on Museveni's belief that he is the regional, he wants to go back home and say, do you see what I have done? We have even brought our brother from South Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
So that creating political federation from an emotive standpoint, I think, is a joke. Therefore, it will only remain in the minds of leaders because I think it would be a very good thing that political federation cannot come from the feel-good factor of leaders at the top without values that bring them together. As long as values of democracy, of justice, of equality are being undermined, you can never have a political federation. Even when in a single unit, even a single unit cannot hold together, Burundi is in trouble.
Yeah. Okay.
Uganda is in trouble.
Yes.
So therefore, I think the future of the political federation is still largely doubted.
Well, let me remind our listeners that in case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the future of the South African community, and our panelists are my colleague, Vincent Makori, host of VOA's Africa 54, Dr. Christopher Kayumba of the School of Journalism and Communication at the University of Rwanda, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst, and I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Washington. Vincent, let's move to the second part of the of what I mentioned in my introduction. Former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa was appointed during this summit as the EAC facilitator for peace between rival factions in Burundi. And the former leader is expected to discharge his duties under the leadership of President Yoweri Museveni of Uganda.
Yeah.
Now, as we all know, as some listeners may know, the issues of Burundi are not so far different from the issues of Uganda. He is a president in Uganda who has just declared a win of an election that's contested. The issues are going to court. And all the issues that were mentioned by the observers, he's the one who changed the constitution to remove term limits. That's like his colleague in Burundi did.
Yeah.
Isn't this a joke?
You know, that's the word I wanted to use. One of the most disturbing things about African leadership is that actually the leaders take it as a joke. If you look closely at how they handle issues, if you ask me, for example, when they went to Arusha, the priority first would have been, how do you attain peace in Burundi?
Yes.
How do you ensure there's a nation, a united nation in South Sudan? And who can really mediate
in good faith
the situation both in Burundi and Rwanda and South Sudan. That is not what has been addressed here. To see, for example, a person who people have issues with being the person actually in charge
of the whole
process, it is a big joke. You feel that, okay, Mkapa looks like a person who can really hopefully mediate fairly this this conflict in Burundi. But having Museveni, we know that so many people have issues with Museveni, not just because of the just concluded elections, but they do have concerns about some of the personal involvement in the regional politics. So I feel that one of the missing thing on the continent, not just in East Africa, is that there are no leaders who are committed to creating progressive nations, nations that have true democracy, that really fight to create a system of justice for all their nations, and therefore they take these things like conflict almost like a joke. You don't see a true commitment to resolving those issues, because otherwise you wouldn't have those same characters being involved in the resolution of some of the regional conflict. So for me, What a negative development. You would have expected things to look different. I'm okay with Mkapa, but I think the mediation of the talks should be taken completely away from Kampala.
Suleiman?
Yes, I agree 100% with Vincent, and I can only observe that, okay, Mkapa, you remember, mediated the Kenya 2007-2008 a civil conflict that arose. So as a person, we don't have a problem with him. The only appreciation I would give to the leaders was the appreciation that actually Museveni was not the right person to mediate, because he has got no moral standing. Two, the fact that he miserably failed, because during the time he was given that responsibility, there was no movement at all. So that was the kindest way they could show him that he has been a failure. They are going to put him aside, because obviously Mkapa is senior. He's a former president himself. We don't expect him to work under 2007. So he's going to take over the system with the time. But also, I wish to also add on what Vincent has said, that it is very absurd and very disappointing to see that the leaders could not pick out the priorities of the people on the ground. The region has just lost 800,000 people in Rwanda in the genocide, 1.5 in Uganda, over 500 in Burundi civil war. It has just lost another thousands in southern Sudan. Their perspective, their priority is not to look at the prospect of peace within the region, because Rwanda has just shifted the goalposts for election. Uganda is going over 30 years. Burundi is simmering. So couldn't they have looked at the prospects of getting peace for the region? Because first and foremost, the economic prospects which they want, the economic integration which they want, the major question to ask themselves is that, does the region have peace to enable us have the economic integration, the economic prosperity which we want for these 165 or 150 million people which we are getting? So major reason was, can we have peace? They didn't look at it from that perspective. Instead, they only look at Burundi, whereas actually the whole region has got a problem. There is restless calm within the region.
I see. Christopher, some people could argue, playing devil's advocate, that maybe it's too much to ask of these leaders to abide by certain principles of democracy, rule of law, transparency, and social justice, while the majority of them assumed power through the barrel of the gun, apart from, I think, one or two, the rest fought their way into power. And you don't, do you expect them to prioritize these values?
Thank you, Douglas. Before I answer that question, 2 points very quickly. First, I want to re-emphasize the point Makori made, the priority, which also touches on your question, the priority of the East African community would have been to define clearly the priority that the region, that they needed to address, things that this region needed that are urgent to resolve. One, he mentioned the peace in South Sudan and power sharing, making sure that peace returns to South Sudan and leaders stop killing their people. And in my view, admitting South Sudan would have been a very good condition to make sure that they force the leaders there, to make sure that they share power and put institutional government in place. Secondly, Burundi. Burundi is on fire. It is also accusing Rwanda. And do you know what they did? Instead of addressing that problem exhaustively, they appointed a Burundian to be the Secretary General of the East African Community, a man who has been supporting the illegal presidency of President Pierre Nkurunziza. Oh. How do you expect that man to run the East African Community when donors, when people in this region are saying your president, the one you are supporting, is holding the presidency illegally?
Right.
So you can see where they are putting the project is not right. And finally, I think on that point, the good thing that came from this meeting of the ESC leaders is the appointment of Benjamin Mkapa. Because to have a successful mediation, you need a trusted, neutral, well-respected leader. And in my view, if you look at the presidency of Mkapa when he was still president of Tanzania, he was really a very good progressive president. And when his time came, he just left.
Yeah.
And so, he won, I think, the Mo Ibrahim Award for being a good leader. And I think because of that, I had even before advocated for his appointment.
I see.
But adding Museveni to him, I think is wrong. Because as you say, I don't think Museveni has the moral authority. I suspect that the reason they are still attaching Museveni to that, it is they want to show that he is a regional power leader who determines things, this is not correct. And when you are saying this, you were asking that, are we not asking too much from this leader by saying they should abide by principles of democracy, the values of justice, the values of respecting the sanctity of life? I don't think that is asking too much, because a leader, a good leader, is someone who respects life.
I see.
And if you see these leaders, they went to the bush, they fought. Museveni himself fought, went to the bush in 1980, 81, because he said elections had been stolen. So he said, I am going to the bush to make sure that elections will never be stolen again here. People's votes will be counted as they are.
Okay.
His closest rival, Kizabesige, from the 18th of February, even before the votes were counted, he was arrested and is still under house arrest.
Let me throw in something here. You know, looking overall, and I keep seeing, you know, for me, I keep seeing a reflection of the Africa Union and the leadership on the entire continent. My assessment is that African leaders, to a large extent, have no respect for the
people.
Citizens, for their people. You will see this, the attitude, the demeanor is that of ownership. They treat the nation, the citizens, as their property. They really have no respect, and that is why there's very little consultation, even when it comes to this formation of federation. I mean, how many times have we really seen an attempt to find out what the citizens would wish? What do they want? What do they think of this federation? Secondly, they obviously, many of them have no vision. They never think in terms of the vision for the nation. They have a vision for themselves. How much they can get out of the power, how long they could stay in power. Nobody thinks about what happens when I'm gone. What will this country look like when I'm gone some years to come? And also you can say, in some respect, they really lack a sense of patriotism. There's no real genuine love for the country. They operate like mercenaries, like they're here for a short time,
and they're going away,
plunder and go. And that is a tragedy.
Suleiman, about 30 seconds left. What do you see as the future? Because remember, the regional South African community collapsed as a result of Amin coming into power and Kenyatta and Mwalimu Nyerere opposing him. How do you see this community surviving near term? Briefly,
very
about 30 seconds.
Very difficult, because Douglas and fellow panelists, Nkurunziza has got a legitimacy problem. Museveni has a legitimacy problem. Kagame has a legitimacy problem. Salva Kiir has a legitimacy problem. The only people there who are truly legitimate are Magufuli and Kenyatta. So it is very difficult even to know whether this is a true representation of the East African community for the future. Because tomorrow, Museveni can be an outgoing president. Tomorrow, Nkurunziza can be an outgoing president. Tomorrow, Salva Kiir can be an outgoing president. I think the priority for the East Africa itself to survive, we shall need the harmonization of the political system. Before they do so, whatever they are doing it just for emotional purposes, not for the future of the East African community.
Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I would like to thank our panel, my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, host of VOA's Africa 54, Dr. Christopher Kayumba of the School of Journalism and Communication at the University of Rwanda, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Our producer tonight was Jackson Mvunganyi, and our engineer was Skip Sisk. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. And thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Simpuga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.